Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian Matt Ritter tells a harrowing story about trying to save a horse.
I say, hey, there's a horse upside down. I don't know how to describe it. You know, I don't know what the condition is. The horse is upside down. I know that's not normal. I know that horses don't have their legs up in the air like that. I start talking to the horse. You know, I'm like, it's okay, Kenny. You're not going to die. It's okay. Like, I don't know what to say to a horse. I don't know. No interaction with horses. I don't really even know, like, is there a word that you say to horses?
Today on Storyworthy, we hear an amazing story from comedian Matt Ritter about being thrown into a situation he was completely unprepared for, saving a horse. Stick around.
Hey guys, it's Matt Ritter, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. I am so glad you guys tuned in today. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. I hope you guys enjoyed the story last week with comedian Bob Golub. And, you know, if you haven't heard it, go back and listen. It's about how he got the job in Goodfellas. He's an actor, a comedian. Do you know Bob?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how he got the job, he, you know, basically auditioned for Martin Scorsese, like in a hotel room. So it's a really great story. So go back and listen to that. By the way, Bob is from the same region in Pennsylvania as I'm from.
It's crazy.
In Western Pennsylvania, yeah. It's not crazy. Well, it's just, you know, ironic.
Yeah, ironic.
Well, anyway, you guys, go back and listen to that. But not today, you guys, because today I'm here with comedian Matt Ritter. And Matt, where are you from?
I am from Long Island, a little town called Plainview.
Okay, so you know a lot of people out here in LA from there, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's like half of the city is New York, tri-state area people.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And I know a lot of people from Pittsburgh. And maybe it seems like a lot just because it strikes me when they tell me they're from there.
Yeah. Also, I feel like you somehow congregate with some of those people in some way. Like maybe you go to a Pittsburgh bar to watch a Steelers game or something, and then it's like, oh, you know so-and-so.
I used to do that sort of thing, but that was a long time ago. Like when I first moved to LA, which is 21 years ago, I did that sort of thing. But you know, on Sunday morning, the game's at 10 a.m.
It's too early.
It's not the same.
Yeah.
Right. So then we got the NFL ticket for quite a while.
Yeah.
And then that got to be ridiculous. And now I just don't watch football.
Yeah.
It all worked out.
I sort of got off football partially for the protest, but also partially because I'm a Giants fan and they stink.
Ah, interesting. So you're like a fair weather fair weather.
You know what? you know what? I live in the fair weather now, so I'm okay with that.
Anyway, you guys, Matt Ritter's here with us today, and he brings forth the topic, A Horse Died in My Arms.
Yeah, that's a heavy one.
And I say to myself, you know, that's just not every day. And I, you know, part of the whole thing here on Storyworthy is that I don't know what the story is before I have the person on because I don't want to know. I want to be surprised and I want it to be fresh. So I don't ask for, you know, any copy or anything. So when I hear this title, I'm thinking, and don't tell me yet, but I'm thinking that it might be like either a veterinarian situation where a horse had to be put down and you were there, you know, like I've had to put down a cat. That sort of thing. I don't know. Then I start thinking maybe it's like a fire thing and the horse had to run away from the fire. I don't know why.
Yeah, because that happened a lot in California. They lost a lot of horses in those fires. So that's where that's coming from
in
your
head. And recently I had Olivia Taylor Dudley on the show and her story is about surviving a Southern California wildfire and she talks about having to let the horses go. Yeah, so then that's my other thought. So,
I thought maybe you were going to be like, oh, did you put it in a movie producer's bed? A dead horse. I thought you were going to go that route because I'm known to do that too. Well, you just said like Goodfellas and that connected me to
and
that.
Yeah, the Godfather. Thing, it's all like a big tapestry, isn't it? That image, by the way, of the horse head in the bed is still so vivid because it's so crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, everybody knows, you know, the mob is this and that, but you don't think that.
No.
You just don't.
Yeah. No. And now, after once we get into the story, after having seen a horse up close and personal.
Yeah.
It's intense.
They're such big animals.
They're so immense and beautiful and just like these, they almost like feel prehistoric because they're so large.
And then on The Sopranos, remember when Tony got a horse, and then there was that whole thing, and then the barn burnt down, and so then there was that whole horse thing. So there's something very elusive about horses, about that whole horse culture. It's something I really don't know about.
I never did either.
And now you do?
And now I do.
Oh, I'm excited. Okay. And the other thing I want to talk to you about, Matt, you have done all sorts of things.
Crazy things. My career has been, and like I couldn't even pretend to have dreamt this up.
Yeah, your career is kind of all over the place because you were a lawyer and you worked in the corporate world for a long time, and then you kind of, you know, abandoned that and became a comedian. When you do that, when you give up a law career like that, do you continue to keep up with your education in terms of like what you need to do to keep present or current?
I just got in a fight with my mom about this week.
What?
She saw that I hadn't paid my bar dues, and we got in a whole thing. And I am at the point now where my career is, I would say, you know, I'm doing well in the entertainment biz, and I've got a lot of things going. But also in a weird psychological level, I had made this decision this year that I didn't want to keep up with them because it feels like I'm having my foot back in there, like, oh, well, what if this doesn't work out mentality, which I, you know, I've kept it up anyway up until this point.
And so how often do you have to pay?
Every 2 years you have to pay $400, and you have to do these like CLE continuing legal education classes. And so I've been doing it.
And how intrusive are the classes? Like how long do they last?
It's like 10 hours a year that you have to.
10 hours a year. Is it on the computer?
Yeah, you can do them on the computer now, but it didn't used to be that way up until recently.
I mean, I'm just trying to like weigh out. Like,
right, yeah. I mean, it's annoying. It's annoying. B, it's like kind of an expense, you know?
Right.
But I think for me more, it's like psychologically, it's like, no, I've put that in the rear view.
Okay, so let's say then, so if you've made the decision?
Yeah, I'm never going to practice law again.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm pretending I'm your mom. If you were to want to practice law again, what would be the steps to get?
Right. So, I mean, I haven't let it expire yet. We had this debate this week.
Oh, so
So it's like very fresh. But let's just say theoretically I let it expire. Then I would have to pay more to renew it. I think it's a lot more. And then I would have to backtrack and take all the classes. It's not like I'm closing this door forever.
Yeah, you still have your education.
Yeah.
So really, I hear what you're saying. Okay, now I'm on your side again.
Yeah, thank you.
Because I
hope
think
my
that
mom
if
listens
you,
to this and, if, and hears it.
If you decide to be a lawyer again, you must have a passion somewhere, and you will, in fact, do the steps you have to do and put the money down, and it won't be a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for now, I hear what you're saying. I would give it up as well.
Okay, good.
Okay, now you know. All right, well, it's been nice to meet you.
Yeah, it's great. I don't have to do that anymore. Yeah, it's great. You agree. I don't have to practice law anymore.
Anyway, you are, as you know, listen, I'm telling you, but you're a writer and you're a producer and you have your hands in a lot of different buckets.
Oh, yeah.
Do they say buckets?
I do. I like buckets. I say irons in the fire, but I don't know, maybe hands in buckets is good, too.
Chickens in baskets.
Chickens in baskets. I like that. I'm going to start saying that and just see the response. You know, when people are like, what do you do? I'm just going to say, I have chickens in a lot of baskets, and I just want to see if people are like, I've never heard that one before.
I have my hands in a lot of chickens.
I have my hands in a lot of chickens. I want to see if anybody, I've got my fingers in a lot of chickens.
I got my thumb all over the balls.
Yeah, I've got my thumb all over the balls. You know.
Anything could happen.
Yeah, I've got my needles in a few tapestries. I don't know.
One of the things that you're working on now is this show, a new show on Wondery called Safe for Work.
Oh, I'm super excited about
it. Are you?
Yeah.
Good. I'm so glad to hear that.
It's such a thing for me. It's like, I always tell people just, you know, you don't know where you're going to be in 5 years or 10 years or even 2 years. Don't let the idea of what you thought you were going to do at 20 or 25 dictate opportunities and how you should feel about them. Like for me, if you would have asked me 2 years ago, am I going to be hosting a workplace advice show? I'd have been like, that's absurd.
Right. Like, but the premise of the show isn't to abandon your job.
No, not at all. Not at all.
No, the premise of the show, you tell us.
So the premise of the show is to give people workplace advice, actual day-to-day practical things to help you and improve the quality of your workday. We spend so much time at work and we don't really have a lot of objective people to talk to about these things. Sometimes we talk to our coworkers and they're a little bit too inside.
You could write to Dear Abby.
You could write to Dear Abby.
Do they still do that?
So we're the new Dear Abby.
But what kind of jobs do the people have that listen to the show?
Across the spectrum.
But is it a job in an office or are they Uber drivers listening?
Everybody's calling in with all kinds of stuff. I mean, we definitely get your typical office worker who's like, hey, you know, my boss is being a tyrant or my coworker's stealing credit, you know. But, you know, we have people from all walks of life with compensation issues, relationships. You know, it's not just office spaces that have relationship issues.
A lot of it's like personal, yeah.
Communication is the biggest, yeah. I think. Personality and communication issues are a lot of the questions that we get.
Yeah. So this guy calls in today and he is asking a question about a boss of his or somebody who's higher up than him and excluding the guy from a meeting, like going behind his back. And anyway, I'm listening to these and I am just cringing thinking I would die if I had to work in an office and worry about that sort of that climbing ahead, how political it gets. Because honestly, Matt, it sounds more catty than high school.
I would say that a lot of the questions that we get they're like straight out of high school. It's like, you know, like, hey, somebody's even stealing my lunch. It's almost like,
yeah.
You know, you have people stealing lunch from the fridge.
It just seems so petty. And then you're talking to people in their 40s and 50s who are accomplished and they sound like, you know, they probably make really good salaries and live in big houses and drive nice cars. And they're talking about people talking behind their backs.
You know, we think we've outgrown these juvenile tendencies, but we haven't. I mean, you think about your family squabbles and they're so juvenile a lot of the time too. Work is no different. You know, I think, you know, we all tend to put on these faces, you know, we put on these masks, we go to work, we make a good salary, we go home, but we never really shed these things that cause us, you know, angst, and we never really, and we don't always solve these interpersonal problems and these communication problems that we have.
Well, I guess what my take home is that I'm glad I am like an independent producer and doing this creative field that I do. It's not always, you know, the best, you know, it's specifically financially, it's not always sound and it's not always, you know, a sure thing. However, I don't have to walk into a cubicle and I don't have to walk into a workplace and somebody judge me or talk behind my back or like I would just start laughing. Like, what's going on, man?
Listen, I left the corporate workplace behind, you know, and I sometimes get these flashbacks of these things that were like some guy threw a stack of documents at me once and I was like, I'm a grown man. How is this happening? You know, but you know, that's the trade off, right? Everybody can be independent and do these creative things. And some people really enjoy and thrive on that corporate dynamic, and some people are really ambitious and want to climb that ladder and are territorial
People need certain material things and you can't necessarily get material things if you're kind of out on your own and
right.
You know, independent.
Obviously. Also, they need to provide for their families or whatever. There's a variety of reasons for why people end up in that environment. But I think it's also funny that you say, like, I couldn't deal with any of those things, because I think the flip side is there are all these other issues about being independent that we get calls on too. You know, people are like, I just feel like I don't have the skills. Like, what if things change and I have to go back into the workplace? A lot of people are like, how do I get back into it? People who have left, you know, are like worried about, you know, doing this independent thing. Finance is a big one that we get.
Well, why finance?
Well, just like, for independence, for people who are
money issues. You get money
just
issues.
Money issues. Yeah. I mean, right. You know. And there are still dynamics at play, even in the independent world where you're dealing with, you know, you may not be dealing with them in an office, but you still have clients.
Oh,
we have a lot of people who have client issues.
Sure.
We had somebody write in or call in and it was like dealing with somebody who was a friend who had now become a client and navigating that.
Yeah.
Boundary, that shifting boundary.
And she
boundary.
Was sleeping with both of them.
Right, probably. There's a lot of that stuff.
Well, you know, also what has changed is so much work is done now via email and texting. And, you know, it's a different level and there's different ways of playing it. Like an email, just how quickly you respond says miles.
Oh, yeah. So there's so many little
nuances.
Messages and nuances and we get that a lot too, because you go, I know how it sounds when I say something to somebody's face. You don't always know how it sounds when you're sending this email inside their brain, and you got to be careful.
And people move very quickly through emails sometimes.
Yeah.
And you don't say what you mean.
Yeah.
So you
big oops
literally
can really destroy your whole career.
Yeah, you literally said, I just had I had a small issue a couple weeks ago with somebody I'm working with on a show. And he said, because we already sent them. And he put a question mark. And I thought, wait a minute. Of course we sent them because I CC'd you on it. And I'm like, what is he talking about? I know we got it. And then I have to go back in and I copy and paste. And I say, he goes, oh, no, I meant a period. It wasn't a question. It was a period.
That reminds me of that Will Ferrell in Anchorman where he's like, who put that question mark there? You remember that?
That's right. Exactly.
Who put that question mark
same
there?
Same thing.
Right.
Same
I thing. I know. An accidental question mark. Causes all kinds
so
of conflict
funny.
Between two people. It's absurd.
So it's really all very, it's just a tricky world. And anyway, I think there's a good place for Safe for Work. So congratulations on
Thank
the show.
You. Yeah, we're really
and
excited.
And I was a flight attendant for 7 years. And I think I might be coming on Safe for Work and talking
Ooh,
about that with you guys.
That's great.
I think. I'm not
I'm
sure.
I'm sure you've got some
we're
stories.
We're talking about something.
Guess what? I just got a pay rise.
I got a pay rise too.
And so did I.
That's because on the 1st of April, the national minimum wage
and the national living wage both went up.
What's more, it's your legal right to receive it.
Find out if you're due a pay rise too.
Check your pay at gov.uk/checkyourpay.
The national minimum wage
and the national living wage. It's a step up in pay.
All right, you guys, but right now we're going to hear Matt Ritter's story, A Horse Died in My Arms, which, you know, can't go wrong. But before we get to Matt's story, I wanted to remind you guys to head over to my website, storyworthypodcast.com, and I'll just leave it right there. Do you know what I mean? I'm not going to talk about the mailing list. I'm not going to talk about, you know, where to sign up, you know, on Apple Podcasts, where, of course, I always need ratings and reviews. I'm not going to talk about my sponsors and, you know, how good they are to me. So when you guys are good to them, they're good to me and how that works. I'm just going to say, go to storyworthypodcast.com. That's all.
Yeah, don't do any of those things. Don't give her a 5-star review. Don't subscribe. I love the way you did that. That was good.
All right, you guys. Matt Ritter's here right now. Listen, he left his career, as we said earlier, as a lawyer to be a comedian. So first of all, we know he has balls. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, big ones. He performs stand-up at the Hollywood Improv, the Comedy Store, all over the place. And he's also been a guest commentator on several shows like CBS News, Fox News on the Record, NBC, MTV.com, Comedy Time TV, and he's guest hosted on SiriusXM's Raw Dog Comedy. Plus, you know this, Matt. You've written for many, many publications like Reader's Digest. Now, wait a minute. Are we talking about the little tiny
The little one. I wrote some jokes in there.
The one in the bathroom.
Yeah, I wrote some bathroom jokes.
Are you laughter is the best medicine?
Uh-huh.
Matt, you should put that right
that
under
wasn't me.
Your name. You've also written for Us Weekly, The Fashion Police. Those are funny.
Yeah, nasty.
Yeah. What do you mean nasty?
I mean, like, you know, you make fun
catty.
Of people's ideas. Catty.
It's catty. Yeah, yeah. But it's not, you're not mean.
No, it's catty. Catty's a better word. You're right.
Yeah. And give me an example of one that you did.
I don't remember, but
you look at
like,
somebody.
You look at somebody and you go, oh, yeah, he killed a cheetah, you know, like. Yeah. Something like that.
It's sort of funny for a second, but that's a fun thing to do.
Yeah, and then I was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
I would do it.
We'll get you in on it. You could replace me.
All right. You've also written for different publications like Above the Law and Bitter Lawyer, so I could see how that would play in.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you have also done a lot of speaking engagements around the country.
Yeah.
Specifically for lawyers.
Yeah, well, I tour a lot. I do a lot of corporate gigs.
Yeah, because they need comedy, man,
yeah,
right?
And they pay.
And they pay. And like we talked about, you're the host of the new Wondery show, Safe for Work. You've also been, one more thing, the co-creator and the producer of Chained to My Ex, which I was watching some of that on MSNBC. And Chained to My Ex is basically when two people have to get divorced, but you can't.
Physically separate. Yeah, that's a big problem in this country.
Happens all the time in L.A.
In L.A. especially. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We had a couple of episodes where people here, actually. And a lot of it is you have kids and... You know, you don't want to separate from the kids, or it's financial, or just emotional. Sometimes people, they even get a divorce, but then they're like, oh, I'll move out eventually. And then it's just like a year later.
We waited until, especially if nobody's lying, if somebody's cheating or something like that, and then it gets, there's problem.
Yeah.
But if it's amicable or it's at least like mature.
Right, handling
then
it
you,
practically.
Yeah, like we didn't get divorced for 2 years because of insurance.
Right, exactly. So just practical things.
Practical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also, by the way, I'm also a recruiter. That's why they hired me for Safe for Work as well. Not just that I was a lawyer.
You recruit who?
I recruit a lot of lawyers to do all kinds of jobs.
What do you mean? Like
I help them get headhunter.
Headhunter for lawyers.
Yeah.
How interesting.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about that because I've dated some lawyers. Listen, you guys can find more out about Matt at mattrittercomedy.com and also follow him on Twitter at mattritter1. All right, you guys, whoever you are, put your hands together for Matt Ritter.
Okay. Well, here we go. So this is a story that's dark, starts dark and gets darker. I actually was in the Outer Banks, North Carolina, about a month ago because my mother-in-law passed away. And it was pretty grim because the island is actually closed fully. Like, it's a travel destination. And so in the wintertime, there's just nothing open there, and to the point where there wasn't even a morgue open at the time. And so we wanted to have her cremated. And so we're just stuck in this island. And, you know, my wife and her sister and her dad are just grieving, you know, and I'm just like trying to be helpful. You know, I'm just like cleaning the house. Like, I was the first person on the scene, and I just wanted to clean up some of the nasty stuff that was in the house before my wife or her sister got to see anything. So it's just, we're just in a bad place to begin this story. And so we finally took 6 days to get her cremated, and we did this ceremony on the beach, and I give a nice little speech and everything. And so, and then I accidentally stepped in her ashes, but that will happen sometimes when you do a ceremony on the beach. I mean, I've seen these movies, you know, like Steve Buscemi does it in The Big Lebowski, and I'm like, just make sure you don't have it blow in your face. That was my only concern, right? So I'm so concerned about not having it blow in my face that I poured it right down on the ground, like in front of me. We had everybody pour it like in this little area on the beach, and then the ceremony's over, and I'm the only person who's behind the ashes as we are leaving to go back over to the beach, and everybody's, you know, kind of in front of me too. So I just stepped right in my mother-in-law's ashes, and my wife just like flipped out, you know. She's like, don't step in her ashes. And I felt terrible, but then we had a big laugh about it afterwards, because, you know, like pain and laughter, they kind of go hand in hand. So we have a 12-hour drive back to New Jersey, where her family, her grandma has this 50-acre horse farm. That's where she grew up. And so we drive back there, and we're doing a Shiva call because we're Jewish. So everybody's coming over in the morning to pay their respects. And so, you know, everybody's just in a really bad way. And, you know, because I'm the in-law, I feel like my role in this is to keep everything together, be organized, make sure the situation doesn't get any worse. You know, this is the, let's turn it around. Let's have everybody visit, make them feel better. And so I get up really early in the morning, and it's 6 a.m. And the housekeeper, her name's Mina, and she's part of the family, actually, to the point where her and her husband live there, and their daughter was actually named after my wife's grandma. And so we're very close with them. And so Mina and I are having coffee together, and we're all just, you know, talking about what a shame it was that my wife lost her mom. And we look outside, and we look out the window, and I see four legs up in the air. And I'm like, oh, my God, what is that? And she's like, oh no, oh no, oh no, it's Kenny. I'm like, the horse's name is Kenny? That's a weird name for a horse. And so we both sprint out, and it's a, as I said, it's a 50 acre farm, so, you know, we're full sprint. By the way, this is the dead of winter in New York, so it's like 10 degrees out, and it's snowing, so it's slippery and it's dangerous out. Like, I remember we had to salt the ice because we didn't want anyone falling, you know, nobody else dying, because there are like 90 year olds coming over for the Shiva call. So we race out there, and the horse is upside down, but it's alive. So I'm like, whew, thank God. And I don't know anything about horses, like next to nothing. Like, I got on a horse once in Montana for like 5 minutes, and I canceled the rest of like the hour thing. I was like, I don't like this. I'm out, you know. But my wife, she grew up breeding horses, thoroughbreds, quarter horses. And so that's like their world, this horse world that I know nothing about. But so we're out there at 6 a.m. and she gets the vet's number. And so I talk to the vet because her English isn't great. And so I say, hey, there's a horse upside down. I don't know how to describe it. You know, I don't know what the condition is. The horse is upside down. I know that's not normal. I know that horses don't have their legs up in the air like that. And so they tell me that it could be a twisted stomach, which is something that apparently kills a lot of horses. And I researched, and it turns out that their intestines are in the wrong shape, or God gave up horses bad intestines. So she tells me that I need to get the horse upright. And I'm like, I don't know. I wouldn't even know how to do that. Like, I don't know what you mean. She's like, just get his muzzle and his leash and get some carrots and guide him up. Because if he's upside down, you know, he may pass away and it's going to be bad. And, you know, if you want to save this horse, you got to get him upright. So Mina scrambles into the house and looks around and can't find the leash. And we didn't want to tell the girls or grandma about this. We're like, let's just try and fix this, because I don't want a horse dying. They already have enough death going on here. So she comes out and she finds the muzzle around the mouth, but she can't find the leash. So I happen to have a 15-pound French bulldog, and that dog has the teeniest, tiniest green leather leash that I bought from Brentwood at a store called To Wag For. Okay. So I'm like, I don't know what to do here. So I put this leash from my 15-pound dog on a 2,000-pound animal's head, and I'm trying to like goad the horse up with carrots, and I'm also scared to put my fingers in the horse's mouth because I'm just afraid of horses. They're giant and they're scary.
Yeah.
And so the second I do this, the horse flips over and almost kicks me in the face and like comes to, and then I like hand the carrots over, and he chomps on the carrots, and then he just takes off, and I'm like, oh my god. And so he takes off like 100 yards, and then he just lays back down and flips over. So then I go chase him, and I do the same thing where I give him the carrot. He jumps up, almost kicks me in the face, and then like sprints again. So he's clearly having these like spasms. He's in agony. I can see that the situation is getting worse. And so I call the vet again. I'm like, listen, I got him up, but then he keeps running and like flipping over. I don't know what to do. She goes, just keep doing what you're doing. It's great. I'll be there in an hour. And so now I'm just like in this crazy game of chasing a horse around, you know, with carrots, trying to keep him alive. And I start talking to the horse, you know, I'm like, it's okay, Kenny, you're not going to die. It's okay. Like, I don't know what to say to a horse to, you know, like, I don't know. I have no interaction with horses. I don't really even know, like, is there a word that you say to horses? You know, like, whoa, whatever. And so finally the vet gets there. And she races in, and then my wife and her sister come out, and they're frantic because they see what's going on now. And this woman's like, go get a bucket of water and all this stuff. It might just be constipation. So I'm like, oh, it could be much ado about nothing. So she comes in, and I've just never witnessed anyone, a vet, deal with a horse. Like I've seen, you know, like Baby Boom and some of these movies where there's like a vet, you know, doing all this stuff to the animals. I swear to you, she just has like... just no hesitation, takes her hand and just fist straight into the horse's butt and like elbow deep. And then all of a sudden, just all this poop comes out. And we're like, okay, that was disgusting. But I'm like relieved. I'm like, oh, did we just save this horse's life? Like amazing, you know? And she's like, all right, well, we'll just give it a couple minutes and see. And then sure enough, the horse flips over again and starts bucking and kicking the feet up in the air. And she's like, oh boy, this is bad. This could be colic, which is this twisted stomach thing that kills all the horses. She's like, okay, we got to get water. And she has this funnel, and she does this thing where she sticks this funnel all the way up the horse's nose. And the horse literally proceeds to vomit like in all of our faces. Like I have like chunks of horse vomit on me. And I'm like, oh my God, please tell me that this just saved the horse. And she's like, I don't know. We'll see.
Oh my God.
And so then the horse starts bucking again. And so this vet is like a neighborhood vet. This is in Central Jersey. And my wife's aunt is kind of crazy. She lives in the barn. And the two of them are a little bit quirky and crazy. And they just start ending up like, while the horse is like running around and I'm like trying to save the horse, they just start like having a conversation about neighborhoody stuff. Like, hey, you know, did you see the King's closed on Main Road? Like, oh yeah, I love that grocery store. And I'm like, hey guys, I'm like trying to hold a horse here alive. Like, I don't know what's going on. She's like, yeah, we're going to have to call for a truck. Like, we got to get it to the hospital. And so we call the truck, and that guy's like, we don't have you need a horse trailer to get the horse to the hospital. So that's going to be an hour. So I'm walking the horse. Remember, I have the tiny little dog's leash. And she's like, just keep walking him up and down. We have this road that leads to the street, you know, that's like a couple of hundred yards. And so I'm walking the horse, and they're just chit-chatting about, like, you know, oh, my grandma doesn't like that movie. She didn't like, oh, she didn't, you know, like she, whatever new release was out. Like, they're just chit-chatting about movies. And I'm like, hello. And so I'm like, hey, guys, the horse is kind of like bucking me over. She's like, it's fine. Just lead it. It's fine. And she's like, you know, I guess she's a vet, so this is not crazy to her. But to me, this is like, I've never interacted with a horse, and now I'm trying to keep a horse alive. I'm trying to keep Kenny alive. So now I'm walking him, and I'm like petting him. I'm like, it's okay, Kenny. The horse trailer's coming. You're not going to die. It's okay, Kenny, and all this stuff. So finally, the trailer gets there. By the way, I'm the only person who's been outside continuously for 2 hours, and it's like 10 degrees. So I'm also starting to like get hypothermia here. And so the trailer comes, and I'm just like, okay, we just got to get him in the trailer and he's going to be fine. And so there's a ramp. And so it's me. Now the guy who runs the farm finally shows up, and this like 70-year-old horse trailer driver, the three of us are trying to pull the horse into the trailer while the vet tries to like goad her in with some carrots in the front. And we get the horse up on a ramp. And I'm at this point where I'm physically, my shoulder is behind a 2,000-pound animal. And I'm pushing with all of my might. And I'm just like, come on, Kenny. Come on, Kenny. And then the girls are out there and I just collapse. Like, it's freezing and the horse won't come in. And now I'm like, am I going to have a heart attack? Like, I felt like I was having a heart attack. Because it's like 20 minutes of just pushing a 2,000-pound animal that doesn't want to go in to this trailer. And so I collapse on the ground. And now everybody's like worried about me. And I'm like, no, I don't think I'm having a heart attack. Just worry about the horse. And so I'm just like breathing in this freezing cold air. And it's just like everybody's super emotional because they're just grieving their dead mom, you know? And now this horse is like on the verge of death. And so just somehow we all managed to summon up all of our strength and seven of us, me, her sister, her dad, Alberto and Mina and the guys driving the truck. And all of a sudden it's just like, we all mustered up like the strength of a nation and we pushed this horse into the trailer and the horse gets in and we all just like, I don't know. We just like had this moment of euphoria. Like it felt like we somehow, you know, did something that not only to save the horse, but it somehow made her mom losing her life. Like in that moment, everything just felt better for like all of 2 minutes. Everybody felt good. And the horse goes off into the trailer and the vet hospital's right around the corner. Like we literally, if it was slightly closer, we could have just like tried to walk the horse there. And so we're all just like hugging, we're crying, but it's like a happy cry that we feel like I don't know, you know, for some reason in my mind, I was like, if I could just save this horse's life, it's just going to, I don't know what it's going to do, but somehow, you know, like I want to save the horse to save its life. But it also in that moment, it was taking on more significance. And then we get a call from the hospital, like not even 8 minutes later, they're like, just so matter of factly, like, sorry to tell you, but Kenny, we have to put him down. And then everybody just like, everybody, it's just like so much, it was just already so much emotion that it was like all starting all over. It was almost like, and then people started showing up and it was almost like, let's not even tell these people that a horse just died. You know, like that's like just too much stuff. I'd say the one kind of funny thing about it was there are all of these brown horses there that are thoroughbreds, and Kenny was a thoroughbred, but there's this one white horse named Fiddle that's a quarter horse, that's a giant. I don't know if you've ever seen a quarter horse, but these are, they seem like, you don't even see them anymore. I mean, unless you like are working on a farm, or these were like the workhorses in the, you know, the olden times. I mean, this thing is, Kenny was like, you know, huge, but then compared to Kenny, this horse is like 1.5 times its size. And so that's kind of the horse that everybody at the farm knows. So when everybody heard that the horse died, it was this weird reaction that people were having, like, oh my God, Fiddle died. Oh my God, the white horse. I'm like, no, not the white horse. Kenny, they're like, oh, okay. Like, is there horse racism going on here? Like it was a weird, and then it just kind of like was, I don't know. They're like, you have a horse named Kenny. And then it just kind of like, you know, it was like that thing where then we started laughing about how ridiculous it was that a horse died, that like the same day that we're having a Shiva call to, you know, deal with her mother's grief. And I don't know, now it's just kind of like, it's very sad obviously, but there's just something hilarious about the fact that, you know, as we're dealing with so much grief, we get hit with another ridiculous bout of grief. And like, I'm literally the only person out there alone at like 7 a.m. just trying to tell a horse that they're not going to die. And it's just like one of those once in a lifetime things where I'm like, I can't believe a horse just died in my arms. And it's still shaking me up. I have these weird dreams about it now. And I don't know if those will ever go away. But I don't know, just crazy. I thought that was story worthy.
It really is. Boy, oh boy, Matt, that's a great story.
Yeah, it was intense.
It's really intense. So when did they actually put the horse down? At the veterinary?
At the vet hospital, like 10 minutes after we put him in the thing.
And how do they put a horse down? It's like,
I think they just give it like a heavy dose of
an injection.
Yeah, like I don't think they do the whole
not like in the Wild West.
Take him outside and shoot him.
Well, I just was thinking that it's a little bit surprising that they even tried to take it to the vet, that somebody on the, like, that veterinarian couldn't have diagnosed him right there on the field. 50-50. 50-50.
When we were on the field, she said, it's 50-50. What do you want to do? It's going to cost us a couple of thousand to send it over there.
Really?
Just to send it over there. And so we said, let's try it. We were like, you know what? It's worth it because there's so much grief here. Like, let's, if we could, if there's a 50% chance of saving this horse,
right,
we'll spend the money.
Well, also, I wonder what's harder, you know, like to lead a horse that's, you know, ill into a trailer or to lift a dead horse into a trailer.
Well, that was the other part. If the horse died, that was going to be a whole excavation.
Matt, I think of everything.
Yeah, you do. You do. You're
no,
right.
You know, I think they
you're
get.
Totally right.
No, I think they get a bulldozer thing. For
right. So that would have been a whole thing because like.
And then you're. And
by the
then
way, then there are people
the
are showing up and they're walking over for the Shiva.
Yeah.
And then they look over to their right and they're like, oh, there's a, is that a dead horse laying on your lawn?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was brutal.
How old was this horse?
He was actually young, 15.
Oh, I didn't know that's young for a horse.
That,
that's young.
I didn't know that either.
I see.
Yeah, they can live to like 40.
I see. So a 15-year-old horse. It's very
sad. His mother's
sad.
There too.
Yeah. Oh, that's not the white one though.
No.
That's not.
But his mother was there. And so the the men and the women stay separate. Apparently that's a thing with horses.
Is that what they call them, men and women horses?
Maybe. Dudes and dudes and ladies. I'm not. I don't. As I said, I know so little of horses that I call them bros and ladies. So the lady horses stay on one side of the. They have these totally separate stables and totally separate fields. But so when Kenny went into the trailer, his mother was standing by the corner, like she knew something was going on, and she started making all these sounds.
Is that true? Now you're making this up.
No, I swear to you.
Is that true?
I'm telling you.
And what kind of sound is that?
I don't know how you describe the horse.
I don't want you to describe it. I don't want to hear it.
Just like a regular horse sound. I don't know how to, like just like making noises.
Like a grumbling.
Like a grumbling.
Aw, that's very sad.
And they don't
sad.
Really make a lot of noise. So that's like, I could tell that, you know, she knew something was up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I believe it, you know, of course they're very like social creatures, horses. And so then they put fiddle in with the female horses because they were worried. Horses are social creatures. They're not supposed to be alone, but they're also not supposed to be male and female on the same side. So we had to decide what to
do. Unless they're mating or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so then what did they do?
They actually were okay.
They let fiddle in.
They let fiddle in and they were okay.
Why did they name him Kenny?
Why did they name him Kenny? I didn't get to the bottom. You know what? Now I think
strange.
Enough time has elapsed that I can ask why they named him Kenny.
Listen, it must have been freezing cold because this was in December.
Yeah, this was
November,
in January.
In January in New York.
Yeah.
So you had gloves on when
no,
you went
nothing,
outside?
Nothing.
You didn't take your gloves
off. I don't have gloves. I live in California. I don't have gloves.
So when you went out in the morning with Mina.
I was wearing jeans.
Yeah.
A sweater and a jacket and trench coat.
Yeah.
That's it. No hat.
And so when did the girls finally wake up and people come out? Was this like 5 hours
no,
later?
No, an hour.
About an hour later.
Yeah, when the vet came, everybody came
then
out.
Then they start seeing what was going on.
Yeah, and her aunt was mad at me for not calling her first. And it was like a whole thing. Like, she's like, why didn't you call me? I'm like,
well, I could see that in a way because you're not horse people and
I
they
know,
are.
But the first thing we did was call the vet because we were like, you're in an emergency crisis
situation. Right, well, that makes sense.
Situation.
Why did the vet take an hour to get there if it was so close?
No, she's not so close. The vet hospital
I see.
Is close.
She should live at the vet hospital.
She should live at the vet hospital.
I think that would be
I think that would solve a lot of problems if she lived at the vet hospital.
So this Kenny was just a big brown horse?
Yeah, he was a thoroughbred. I mean, he was beautiful.
Oh. Yeah.
He's beautiful, but he's not this giant white Norse god horse that everybody loves.
Yeah, fiddle. Not the fiddle. Not the fiddle type.
Yeah.
When you were with him and, you know, he had been going through all those bouts, because that must have been really exhausting him to watch him exert himself like that and buck around and then fail or, you know, fall over and lie there. Every time he lied down, was he just on his side or were his feet up in the air?
No, so first he would lay on his side. I think he was, you know, trying to get comfortable, but he couldn't.
Yeah.
So then he kept like flipping over because I guess that was the most comfortable for him.
When the neighbors and everybody were just chatting about the neighborhood and you're the only one like giving the horse attention.
It was ridiculous.
Did you cry? I think I would have cried.
There was just a lot of emotion, you know, and we had been crying for a week.
Yeah.
You gotta understand, like a week of
nonstop. How old was your mother-in-law, by the way?
60.
Oh, she was very young.
Yes.
So it was a tragic death.
Yes.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
that's
so
sad.
We had already been crying for weeks. I was already like full of emotion. So I'm sure I was crying all day then too.
Yeah.
You know?
I like how
when I was like talking to him, I was crying because I was like, I don't want you to die.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
That's really sad.
I know.
That's very dramatic.
It was.
Yeah, I felt really sad for you. I just,
Was the story supposed to be hilarious?
No, not at all. Okay. No, it's not about that.
Okay.
It's not about that. It's just shocking. It's just shocking. And then when the vet like put her hand into the horse, did she have a glove on?
You know, I want to say she did, but I don't remember her putting it on. Like in my mind, she didn't, but she probably does.
Yeah.
Like in my mind, now that I'm picturing it, I picture her without it because it was so was so jarring to see her do it.
And then the horse vomiting like that.
Yeah, they stuck this. I have a picture of it. I'll show you. I have a picture of them.
You took pictures.
Just this one of them because I thought she was going to live. I thought he was going to live at the time.
Yeah.
So I kind of was like, wow, I can't believe they stuck a funnel all the way up a horse's nose and down the throat.
Gosh.
Yeah. At the time, because she. At first, she was like, it could just be constipation, you know? So I was like, oh, this is great.
Wait, this happened in the Outer Banks of North Carolina, New York.
No, this was a 12-hour drive to Central Jersey.
This was after you went back up to New Jersey, right, exactly. Because I was thinking about
the morning we got back.
The morning you got back. I could totally see you trying to be the one with a calm head, like, because you're the one that's a little bit, you know.
Removed slightly emotionally, less than them.
Because, of course, the kids are going to, everybody else is going to be wiped out, devastated.
They're a wreck.
Because they're mom,
right? They're a wreck. And yeah, and it's like. My wife's grandma, this is the second child she lost. So it was very, like,
it's just sad. Oh, yeah, to lose your child.
Yeah.
Lose your second child.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Who's the aunt that lives in a barn?
She's just Meg. She's just, we love her.
And Meg in a barn.
Yeah, she's just, you know, she lives in a barn. And the thing is that the horses to her are her kids. She doesn't have kids.
Yeah.
And she thinks of them as her kids. So she was really hit hard.
Yeah. That's a very dramatic story.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Oh, man.
Let me go back real quick to the lawyers thing. So you find lawyers, you hook up lawyers to...
In-house, any
but
job.
But what does that mean? So you...
Companies call me, all kinds of companies, Fortune 500, law firms, startups. They call me and they say, can you help us find a new general counsel? Or we need a, you know, we need a startup lawyer. We need a business lawyer. We need a litigator.
Yeah.
And I have a pool of... I have this company that I'm connected with called Lateral Link, and they have a huge pool of candidates.
I see. And so it's like almost like a ZipRecruiter or something, but for lawyers.
Yeah.
And then you're not the middleman, but you are the middleman.
Yeah, that is my role.
And then why are you the authority?
So I was...
I'm just trying to figure
this out. I was... not to like toot my own horn, but
please.
I went to an Ivy League law school. I worked at the biggest firm.
University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I worked at Crooklyn Ellis, the biggest firm in the world, for 5 years. And so I have a very good understanding of what the credentials and like exactly what the work is. Like I can look at a candidate very quickly and identify whether they're going to be a good fit.
How interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you must be very, knowledgeable about different types of law then.
Yes. You have to be.
What's the most boring law? Tax law. Am I right?
I would say not.
Tax laws keeps changing.
Well, that's why I say it's not the most boring because it's actually like in terms of what the learning new things, it's dynamic, you know?
No.
I'd say.
It's numbers.
Yeah, well, it is. But I'm saying when they change the laws, then you have to figure out. I mean, I don't think it's sexy. The most boring regulatory stuff is
what's
boring.
That mean?
Like municipal codes, municipal attorneys. Gosh. I don't want to talk crap about my candidates. They're all good. It's all good. They're all exciting.
Yeah.
They're all very exciting.
The lawyers are.
Yeah.
Do you meet them before you recommend them or do you not always meet
them? I try to have lunch with them because, you know, the personality is important.
Get a feel for who they are.
Personality
is
very important.
Because the jobs you're sending over, these aren't $30,000 a year jobs.
No, they're it's high paying.
High paying and they're more careers. It's more, you're really making a match.
It's not a gig.
So who pays for the head? The company pays for you to find a lawyer.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, man. I don't know.
Yeah, because you're doing a big vetting of these people.
Do you ever pick the funny people or is that not a turn on? That doesn't work.
No, it definitely works if it's the right company. You know, it's like, we talk about this a lot on Safe for Work. It's a lot of times your dream job isn't your dream job because personality-wise, you're not a match with that company's values. We had a girl call up and she likes to be the funny person at work. And
they
were a buttoned-up place. It's like, that's not going to work. You're never going to be able to fit in there.
That would be a nightmare to
me. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like some people.
There's nothing worse than having a job that it doesn't suit you.
Right. So
there's just nothing worse.
So absolutely. I send, you know, the funny people to a place that values that.
Yeah. And also I, you know, I've never been in the corporate world like that, but I know from auditioning a lot and stuff like that in Hollywood that the casting director, who is like the boss hiring you, they want you to do well so flipping badly. Like they are so on your side because they want to fill the job. So I think that that's something that when, listen, I'm giving out workplace advice. I know nothing. Good. But it just seems to me that you should go in with the attitude that they're on your side.
I would say that that is one of the biggest misconceptions that candidates have mentally when they go into a job interview, is this idea that they should go in with the idea that the person interviewing wants to be done with the interview process. They
Big
want
time.
You to walk in and be the person. I always tell candidates, I go, listen, all you have to do is do two things in that interview. Impress them with your credentials, but also have them feel like they found the right person.
Right. Give them the confidence. Like, you have to be the quarterback.
Yeah.
You can't be like, well, you can't interview a quarterback and the quarterback say, well, you know, maybe it'll go well. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
The quarterback has to be like, yes, here's the plan. We're going to do this and this and we're going to win.
But the candidates don't realize that that's where they're starting from a position of sitting across the desk. They should, you know, you think they'd be starting from a position of, oh, this next person coming in, I hope they're the guy or girl.
Well, also, as the candidate, you have some power because they want you to be right.
Yeah.
So you actually do have some leverage, so you don't have to be so on the defense.
Yeah, I think that's the big mistake.
Yeah,
People walk into interviews too much on defense.
Yeah. Well, because you're insecure. And,
we all
are. And
listen,
you're not sure.
I feel like a fraud all the time.
Well, I was going to say, Matt, I was going to mention that to you.
No, but you are.
You have to fake it till you make it and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just that is a little bit hard for people to grasp because of, you know, the way they grew up, the way their
childhood stuff could be coming out at a job interview.
Up.
And it's easier
personal.
Said than done, right? To say to a candidate, hey, go in there and be confident. And it's like, well, no, I'm not a confident person. But there are little things, right? Like body language even, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you may not be confident, but they don't know that. If you're slouching and, you know, you're kind of like not making eye contact, then they have a pretty good idea of it.
Yeah. Hey, listen, thank you so much for coming on Storyworthy today.
You know what? This was fantastic. And I feel like it's helped me deal with this too. I haven't told this story.
It's
out
really,
loud.
It was touching. And I felt like at points I thought I was on Little House on the Prairie. And then I was just like, I was like in an ER show. It had everything, man, really.
I wish I could have saved Kenny.
All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Let Matt know that you enjoyed his story and tweet him over there on Twitter at MattRitter1. And then, of course, follow me over there as well. At Storyworthy. And join us next week on Storyworthy for actor-comedian John Gabris and his story about overconsumption.
And now I'm shit-faced. And I haven't been this drunk yet in my life. I'm 16, and this is the drunkest I've ever been because I would try to impress a girl. That would be a recurring pattern for 20 more years.
Don't miss the incredibly funny John Gabris next week on Storyworthy. All right, you guys, I want to thank everybody over at Wondery Media, including Arnon Lopez, and everybody on the Wondery team. You know, there's a team over there, Matt.
Love those guys.
Love those guys. And a big shout out to all the sponsors today. Really, you guys, without you guys supporting the sponsors, then I don't get money to buy the groceries. You see how that's how it all works, right?
Gotta eat.
You gotta eat. And I don't ever support sponsors that don't believe that.
Good sponsors. I like that.
I only do the good sponsors. So there's that. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Matt Ritter. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.